And now, for our feature presentation. Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind. Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's Rage of Eagles. Narrated by Mort Shelby. With performances by David Coyne, Terence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Richard Rowan, Thomas Penny, Vanessa Benjamin, Michael Glenn, Kate Torrey, Sonny Lasky, Ken Jackson, James Konacek, Tim Carlin, Christopher Graybill, and James Lewis.
Jamie and Kate McAllister were together now, buried side by side on a ridge overlooking the huge valley they had settled. It was up to their children now to carry on the McAllister legacy. 9 children, 8 of them living through the harshness of the West. A whole brood of blonde-haired, blue-eyed kids who had produced another brood of blonde-haired, blue-eyed kids. It was said in this part of Colorado that if you shook a tree, a McAllister was more than likely to fall out. Some have written that Falcon McAllister was a cold-blooded killer who terrorized the West, killing hundreds of men for sport after his wife's death in 1876. Actually, the number of men who fell under Falcon's guns was much lower than that, and there was no sport involved. It's true that Falcon was a gunfighter, and it is also true that he was a skilled gambler, but it is not true that he was an outlaw and a highwayman. That's nonsense, because Falcon was a rich man at the time of his wife's death. Falcon McAllister was a spitting image of his father. He stood 6'3" and was heavy with muscle. Just like his father, Falcon was quick on the shoot. Jamie and Falcon were both known as bad men. And in the West, that just meant he was a bad man to crowd. The kids of Jamie and Kate McAllister stayed close to home, except for Andrew and Rosanna, who became famous musicians and actors and toured the world. A McAllister was the sheriff of the county, another was the mayor of the town. They all possessed huge holdings and were successful ranchers and miners and business people. It was a peaceful town with a large bank, a newspaper, good schools, and several churches. Outlaws and riffraffs knew better than to start trouble in McAllister's Valley. But occasionally, one would drift in with news of interest. The news usually was about Falcon McAllister. In the 6 months or so since Falcon buried his wife Marie and then went on the drift, alone with his grief, not much had been heard from him. All that was about to change. It was time to move on. Falcon had holed up for a month in a tiny cabin built into the side of a mountain. He had received word that Nance Noonan had sent an army of men in pursuit of him after the shooting in Utah, during which 2 of Nance's brothers had been killed. With an army chasing him, Falcon had wisely holed up. It was now summer in the high country, and Noonan's hands would be busy moving herds of cattle. They wouldn't have time to hunt for him, at least not for a while. Falcon had grown a beard during the time he'd holed up in the cabin. Now he carefully sculpted the beard and trimmed his hair. He inspected his face in a piece of broken mirror. A little older, his eyes a little wiser. He rolled up his blankets and his ground sheet, then carefully tidied up the cabin, because someone else might need a place to bed down. He slung his saddlebags over one shoulder, picked up his rifle, and closed the door behind him. Falcon was out of supplies. No coffee, no flour, no beans, nothing. It was past time to move on. Shortly after the shootout, he had traded horses with a man from Idaho Territory who had trailed a herd of horses down south and was heading home with a few of his hands. Falcon had told the man who he was and what had happened, not wishing the man to get shot by Noonan's men.
"Son, I knew Nance Noonan, and I don't like Nance Noonan. I knew your pa, and I like and respected Jamie McAllister. Anytime Noonan wants to lock horns with me, he can damn sure start."
Falcon picked out a good pack horse, then chose a huge chestnut gelding with mean yellow eyes. He was one of the biggest riding horses Falcon had ever seen.
"You sure you want that horse, boy? He's a mean one. I've come damn close to shooting him several times since I acted a fool and traded for him. Ain't nobody riding. He'll stomp you if he gets half a chance."
"He won't stomp me."
"I'll just be damned. I always heard them McAllisters had a way with horses."
The rancher said the horse had no name, but everybody who had tried to ride him got throwed off, and when they hit the ground, they always said, "Oh, hell."
"That's good enough. Hell. That's what I'll call him. That's where he just might be taking me."
Falcon had holed up in Wyoming, on the east side of the Wind River Range. He stayed on the east side as he headed north toward a town just beginning to blossom. No one gave him a second look as he rode in. Most were too busy. Falcon registered at a hotel that was so new it still smelled of fresh-cut lumber, and there were little piles of sawdust in the corners of the room. He signed in under the name Val Mack.
"Mr. Mack, welcome to our town. Here on business?"
"No, just passing through."
"Gonna be a fine place to settle down and start a business. Town's booming. Enjoy your stay, Mr. Mack."
The room was small but clean, and the bed comfortable. The sheets appeared to be fresh. Falcon wadded up some dirty clothes and took them over to a laundry. Then he walked over to the general store and bought some new breeches, shirt, socks, and underwear. He also bought a box of 44s. At a bathhouse, he soaked and scrubbed until he was clean and free of fleas and dirt, then had the barber shape up his beard and trim his hair. He felt 100% better as he located a cafe and walked over for a meal. The stew was hot, and there was plenty of it, and the apple pie was tasty, but the coffee was too weak for Falcon's liking. He walked back to the livery to check on his horses, mainly to see if Hell had killed anyone who got too close to him. Big Chestnut had his nose stuck in a feed bag and was quiet, as was Falcon's sturdy pack horse.
"Hey, mister, be careful around the Chestnut."
"I done figured that out, mister."
Falcon went in search of the marshal's office, but the door was locked.
"Marshal's out of town, mister. Won't be back for a couple days."
Falcon thanked the urchin and walked on. One less obstacle he'd have to hurdle. Not that he was worried about what the local law might do. In the early days of the settling of the West, local lawmen took care of local business. What happened outside their jurisdiction was a little concern to many. Falcon strolled the town's business district, which did not take all that long, up one side and down the other. His tour of the town complete, Falcon went back to the hotel, took a chair under the awning on the boardwalk in front of the hotel, and lit a cigar. The cowboy walked up and sat down in the chair beside Falcon. They were the only ones sitting on the hotel's boardwalk. Cowboy pulled out a sack of tobacco and rolled him a smoke.
"Your pa befriended me a few years back, Falcon. He was a good man. He seen some good in me when nobody else could and straightened me out. Now you ride careful. Nance Noonan's got friends all over the damn place. Any direction you want to ride for 500 miles. What they're doing is they're all working to set up a cattle empire. I don't know if they'll be able to pull it off, but if they do, small ranchers won't have a chance. Rod Stegman married Nance Noonan's sister. He owns a 44 brand. Rod is one mean son of a bitch, and his sons are all about half crazy. Same with his brothers, and there's about six or seven of them. They're all power drunk. But the thing is, when one itches, they all scratch."
"And I cause them to itch."
"You sure do. Noonan and Stegman and some of the others has had riders out all summer looking for you. It's about to drive Nance even nuttier than he is already. There's federal warrants after you, Falcon. Chet Noonan really was a deputy federal marshal."
"Probably his brother arranged it. How about the marshal here?"
"Oh, he's all right. But he better watch his back. If he tries to buck the powers that be, some of Nance's cohorts will put a bullet in him and stick that badge on one of their own.
I've been thinking about heading back to Colorado.
I don't know where to tell you to head. Ain't no place gonna be safe for you as long as there's a single Noonan or Stegman alive. And maybe some of their friends. They're all a bunch of thieves and murderers.
How'd you recognize me?
Man, you and your pa look so much alike, it's scary.
We do resemble, son.
The cowboy stood up and towed out a cigarette butt on the boardwalk.
Watch your back trail, Mr. Mack.
I'll do it, friend. And thanks. Cowboy, if you're ever in Valley, Colorado, look up any McAllister and tell them about this meeting. They'll help you out. No questions asked.
The cowboy touched the brim of his hat with his fingertips and walked away. Falcon walked over to the general store and bought supplies enough to last several weeks. A different clerk waited on him this time. Falcon added several boxes of .44s to the list.
You got any dynamite?
Sure do.
Falcon bought half a case with caps and fuses and carried the supplies over to the livery, stowing them in the stall with Hell. No one would steal them from under the baleful gaze of that big chestnut. Falcon was riding out of town before dawn the next morning, heading for the grasslands and cattle country. He skirted a small settlement and kept riding for days. He saw signs of Indians, but if they saw him, and they probably did, they decided to leave him alone. Then he remembered a trading post and cut toward it. Falcon looked the place over carefully before riding on in. There were some saddled horses at the hitch rail. He couldn't make out the brands, but it didn't matter. He was tired of riding around trouble. Falcon rode up and swung down at the rear of the building, now more of a huge general store than a trading post. He remembered the saloon section was at the west end of the building, a partition separating the drinking area from the general merchandise part of the store. Falcon slipped the hammer thongs from his pistols as he walked around the building, entering the trading post from the front. The interior of the place had been changed. There were tables off to one side for eating now. Falcon sat down at one, his back to a wall. He faced the closed door that led to the saloon. An Indian woman walked over to the table and stared at him for a moment. Then her eyes filled with recollection. She cut him toward the saloon, and Falcon nodded in understanding.
Got stew. It's good.
Bring me a plate and a pot of coffee.
The stew was beef and potatoes, and it was hot and good. The fresh baked bread was tasty too, and the coffee was strong. The Indian woman looked first at the front door, then at the closed door to the saloon, then at Falcon. Falcon made the sign for trouble. In stepped a man who looked to be in his late 50s, a woman of about the same age behind him. They were followed by another man of about the same age, then a young woman and a boy of about 10 or so. From the look of their clothes, they were probably small ranchers. A man suddenly parted the curtains that led to the living quarters behind the counter and gave Falcon a startled look. Falcon figured he may as well just ditch the beard. Everyone seemed to recognize him anyway. He took a second look at the young woman. She was a beauty. Blonde hair and a figure that would make a dead man peek out his coffin. She was also dressed in men's breeches, something that was rare these days. The lad with the young woman was blonde, and the two bore a strong resemblance. Falcon figured the women for mother and daughter. The young lady cut her eyes to Falcon, and he smiled at her. He got a frown in return, so he just went back to eating his stew.
Mr. Bailey, Mrs. Bailey, how y'all today?
The man with Bailey, whom Falcon figured to be the foreman, stepped to one side and faced the closed door leading to the saloon. Falcon noticed he was all ready to hook and draw. Mother and daughter moved to the bolted cloth section of the store. The older man, Falcon figured the husband of the woman and the father of the young filly, paused and gave Falcon a look. It was not an unfriendly gaze.
Afternoon.
Afternoon? Haven't seen you around here before.
Just passing through.
Maybe he's one of them hired guns of Gilman.
Hush, Jimmy. He didn't mean nothing by that remark, mister.
I didn't take anything by it. Who's Gilman?
The man who figures himself to be the he-coon of this area. Part of the Cattlemen's Alliance.
Well, I don't know what that is either. I'm a long way from home ground.
That ended the chit-chat, and Falcon returned to his half-finished plate of stew and another cup of coffee. Falcon recognized one of the men entering the back door immediately. A bully and a hired gun from down Mexico way, and he was known as Red Broner. Falcon didn't know the other three, but could tell they were of the same stripe. Hired guns who didn't know one end of a cow from the other. They'd all been drinking and were looking for trouble. Falcon sat motionless, partly obscured by shadows in the dim light. So far, they hadn't noticed him.
Well, now, if it ain't the Bailey family done come to pay us all a visit. I figured you folks would have turned tail and run off by now.
You figured wrong, Red.
Old man, you keep that mouth in your ear shut, for I shut it up permanent.
Anytime you feel lucky, Red.
Bailey stepped between his foreman and the troublemaker.
That'll do. We came in for supplies, not trouble. I need you alive, Kip.
All right, John. This time.
I reckon two old men would nearabouts make one whole man, don't you, Red?
Now, that makes right smart sense to me. We could get shut of some pesky little trouble for the boss right here and now. How about that, Bailey? You think that's a right smart idea?
You leave my grandpa alone!
Jimmy ran up and hit Red in the belly with a small fist. Red shoved the lad away.
Hey!
Hell, the boy's got more nerve than both them old men.
Jimmy lunged at Red, and this time Red backhanded the boy.
Don't hit the boy.
All eyes turned toward Falcon, a tall figure standing in the shadows.
This ain't none of your affair, mister. Stay out of it.
I'm making it my affair.
Do tell. And who might you be?
Val Mack. Names make any difference?
Well, Val Mack, you throwing chips at a losing hand here. You know who we ride for?
No, and I don't care.
I'll take the Drifter, Red.
He's all yourn, Green. But he's gotta be some sort of idiot for sticking his nose in this.
Your play, Green.
Okay, Tinhorn. Now!
Falcon shot Green in the chest before the corpse could grip the butt of his .45.
Jesus.
Falcon holstered his .44.
Looks like I won that hand, Red. Now, you big mouth son of a bitch, it's your turn.
Red suddenly looked a little sick around the mouth. He'd been around and he'd seen some fast gun hands, but he had never seen anything even come close to this tall stranger.
Red, Gilman needs to know about this. Let's ride.
Good idea, Red. You listen to your pal there. You just tuck your tail between your legs and slink on out of here. Run home to your master and whine. Take these rabid coyotes with you.
He's crazy in the head, Red. Gotta be. Let's get the hell gone from here.
Drag Green out with you.
Hold him out, boys. You're a dead man, mister. And I know Val Mack ain't your real name. What is it?
Well now, Red, I've been called lots of things in my life. But Val Mack is my real name. You can just call me the Better Man.
You dirty son of a bitch!
Falcon reached up and jerked a bridle off a nail on a post. He proceeded to beat the snot out of Red with the silver inlaid bridle.
Please! Please! No more! No more!
You walk real light around me should we ever meet up again. Now get out!
Red crawled out of the store on all fours. Falcon hung the bridle back on the nail and returned to his coffee.
Who are you, mister? Red's supposed to be one of the fastest guns around.
He's a yellow-bellied back-shooting tinhorn. Tell me, how many small ranches are there around?
Not near as many as there were a year ago. I reckon there's about 8 of us left.
This Gilman playing the game rough, eh?
There's been some night riding and house and barn burning. And some killing.
And then Gilman picks up the property for 10 cents on the dollar or so?
You got it. Them that's left alive to sell, that is.
Trading post owner's wife came out with a mop and bucket and began mopping the floor where Green had bled and died.
We better get the supplies and get on back to the ranch, John.
What? Oh, yes, of course. I've forgotten why we came in.
Falcon wondered why the Baileys didn't get their supplies from the two-bit burg not far from there. He figured Gilmore probably owned the town. The town was little more than a general store, a saloon, a livery, and a barbershop bathhouse, the owner serving as the town's barber, doctor, and undertaker. There was a couple of other buildings. Falcon watched as the owner began bringing out and stacking up bags and boxes of supplies.
You want some friendly advice, Mr. Mack?
Sure.
You better not dally too long. Soon as Gilman's gun hands report what happened here, Miles will be riding to find you.
That's good advice, Mr. Mack. He's got a rough bunch working for him.
Oh, I like it around here. I just might stay a few days.
The trading post owner gave him a quick look and rolled his eyes. Falcon looked at the little boy standing wide-eyed, staring at him. He walked to the counter and got a fistful of peppermint candy and handed it to Jimmy.
Here you go, boy.
Kind of you, Mr. Mack.
The boy's seen some awful sights this day, ma'am.
He's seen killing before. That ain't nothing we're proud of, just stating a fact.
Falcon nodded in understanding. Too many kids in the West had to grow up fast. Many of them doing a man's job by the time they reached Jimmy's age, never really enjoying any carefree time. John Bailey looked at Falcon and jerked his head toward the outside. Falcon stepped outside with the ranch owner and foreman.
You wouldn't be looking for a job now, would you, Mr. Mack?
Well, sir, not really. But I do know something about cattle and horses. You need a hand for a few weeks?
We sure do.
I can stick around for a few weeks. Let me settle up for my meal, and I'll follow you out to your ranch.
Not even gonna ask what we pay?
No. 3 hots and a cot, do me for a few weeks.
John Bailey's ranch was not small by anyone's standards, and he was running a pretty good-sized head. Problem was, as John had explained on the ride out, he couldn't get him to market. Miles Gilman had made things difficult for his competition.
You like my brand, Val?
The Bailey brand was a rocking chair.
I do. It's smart. That'll be difficult to change into anything else.
You seen the Gilman brand? A striking snake. Real ugly brand.
Fits him just right. Miles is a human rattlesnake.
The ranch house came into view, and it was a nice, strongly built home. Plain, but practical. The bunkhouse sat off to one side. There was smoke coming from the ranch house chimney.
That's Cookie. He's too crippled up to ride much, but he's a good cook. And he hates Miles Gilman. He crippled him with the shotgun. Shot him in the legs. Cookie can get around, but he limps badly. And he's got a touch of old age coming on him, too. But he's a damn good man.
You real particular about your hands, John?
I don't follow you, Val.
Well, I know some old boys who don't scare worth a damn. But they aren't really cowboys.
Can they sit a horse?
They can ride anything with hair on it, including a grizzly bear.
But would they ride for the brand?
Wouldn't have mentioned them if they didn't.
How long would it take for you to get them here?
Where's the nearest telegraph office?
In town. But town is dangerous. It's named Gilman.
Oh, I can have them here in a couple of weeks. Give us a couple of weeks to round up the cattle, and we can have them on the trail to the railhead.
How many of these men can you get?
6, maybe 7. But I have to warn you, they're not spring chickens. They'll be men mostly in their late 50s and early 60s. Maybe a couple older than that.
If you're sure they can stand up to a cattle drive, hell, get them. I sure ain't got nothing to lose.
I'll ride into town first thing in the morning. I'll leave early and get there just as the telegraph office is opening.
Son, that town is a death trap.
We'll see.
I'll get you fresh blankets for your bunk.
That's nice of you, Miss Angie.
Just Angie, please.
Falcon helped carry the supplies into the house, got his blankets. By the time he returned, a man with a bad limp had taken his horses down to the corral and was waiting to howdy and shake with Falcon. He had not attempted to unsaddle Hell.
I'm Cookie.
He offered out a calloused hand. Falcon took the hand, hard as a rock, and shook it. He got the distinct impression that somewhere down the line he'd met the man.
Val Mack.
You know what you're getting onto here, Val?
Peck of trouble, I reckon.
More like a wagon load. Come on! Let's walk over to the bunkhouse and get you settled in.
The bunkhouse was well built and snug. The bunk comfortable and long enough for Falcon's tall frame. Cookie limped back to the house and Falcon unpacked his gear and stowed it away. Falcon had noticed that Cookie wore a pistol all the time, so Falcon checked his own 6 shooters and his rifle. He made sure all the ammo loops in his cartridge belt were full. Then he sat outside the bunkhouse on a bench, smoking a cigarette.
Nice spread. John Bailey's done well for himself and his family.
Then Falcon wondered what had happened to the man who'd fathered Angie's child. Dead? drifted away like some men do? Fine-looking woman like that, he couldn't see the husband drifting off. Then Falcon gave some serious thought to the men he'd try to get hold of come the morning. He'd send a wire to some settled-down friends of his, and then they would attempt to get hold of the old war horses somehow. Money to get him here as quick as possible was no object. He had $5,000 with him in a money belt and in his saddlebags, which were now hidden under a loose board in the bunkhouse. But Gilman was small potatoes compared to Nance Noonan and his brothers, and on his way to the cabin where he'd holed up, Falcon had learned there were 10 Noonan brothers. There were 8 left since Falcon had dispatched Chet and Butch, and each of the brothers had 5 or 6 kids. Plus, Falcon knew with all hands combined, there were at least 100 men at Nance's command.
Well, Pa had about that many men chasing him on more than one occasion.
Falcon rose from the bench and went to the wash basin to clean up for supper, scrubbing his face and neck and hands with strong soap and drying off with a towel from a peg. He looked at his reflection in the piece of mirror affixed to a post. In the mirror, he caught movement and turned. Kip was walking up behind him.
Supper's nearabouts ready, Val. John wants you to come up to the house for a drink before we eat.
I could stand a drink. A question or two, Kip.
Ask away.
What happened to Angie's husband?
Name was Charles. He's a good boy. Him and Angie got married when she was 16, he was 17. Had Jimmy a year later. About 2 years ago, Gildman's oldest son, Lars, braced Charles in town one afternoon. Yeah, Charles wasn't no gun hand. He was a pretty good shot, but no fast gun. Lars called him some real vile names. Charles jerked iron. Lars is mighty quick. Remember that, Val. Lars gut-shot him and left him in the street. Well, after the family shook off the grief, the war was on. But John Bailey didn't start the second round, neither. Gilman did. We had 10 hands here then, not counting me, nor John, nor Cookie. One by one, Gilman's men scared him off or killed him off. You ever heard of a man calls himself Border?
Oh, yeah. Supposed to be one of the fastest guns anywhere around.
He is. Latin and quick. A killer through and through. He's crazy, I think. He's been on Gilman's payroll for about a year now. He can usually be found at the Stampede Saloon in town, waiting like a damn rattlesnake for someone to say something to him so he can call him out and either back him down and run him out of town or kill him.
You reckon he'll be there about dawn tomorrow?
He lives at the saloon. Got a room on the second floor. Why?
'Cause I plan to be in town about dawn.
Then I'll meet you at the corral about 4.
Suits me. Now let's go eat supper.
The town of Gilman had grown since Falcon had last seen it. Falcon didn't recall it being named Gilman.
It wasn't when we first come out here. Then Gilman became a top dog and decided the town should have his name. Them that did have the courage to kick up a fuss soon changed their mind about it, or left.
Seems like to me the territorial governor would have something to say about this situation.
He don't even know what's really going on. He did send a man in, but nobody in town would talk to him. Besides, Gilman ain't really doing nothing illegal. That can be proved, that is. It's our word against his. If one of us says he does something, he's got 50 people who says he didn't.
Is there an attorney in town?
One. In Gilman's pocket. Gilman gave him a small spread he took away from the Nettles family after Tom Nettles turned up dead.
What did the sheriff say about it?
Sheriff's 2 days hard ride away with 2 deputies to cover the entire county. Besides, Gilman's bought him off too. He's not gonna do a damn thing.
The men rested their horses on a small rise overlooking the town. Just looking at the town, it seemed quite pleasant. A bank and a church had been built since Falcon had last seen the place, and a dozen or more other homes and businesses were there.
If drunk cowboys or crazy Injuns or vice versa ain't torn down the wires, the telegraph office is wedged in between the general store and the barbershop.
Well, fine. Should be opening up about right now. Is there a cafe in town?
Rosie's Cafe, right down there. That's the only spot in the town that's neutral ground, or supposed to be. Don't always work that way. But it's the only real nice cafe where a man could take his family for 80 miles in any direction.
I'll meet you there in a few minutes. We'll have breakfast.
Falcon sent his wires, using a name the Cheyenne had given him long before he married Marie. He didn't request a reply. If the mountain men got the word and could make it, they would be there.
Funny name. Injun name?
That's right.
These messages don't make no sense to me.
Well, they will to the people who get them.
He stood by the cage and read each tap until the last message was sent. Then he tossed money on the counter and left. With any kind of luck, he and Kip should have had their breakfast and been on their way long before the telegrapher could have gotten word to Gilman. However, the gunfighter who called himself Border was another matter. On the boardwalk, Falcon looked over at the Stampede Saloon. The doors behind the bat wings were still closed, and the swamper had not yet begun his work for that morning. Falcon walked over to Rosie's cafe and pushed open the door. The place was already about half full of men. Kip was sitting at a table in the corner. As Falcon stepped in, the men looked him over. Falcon ignored him and walked over to the table where Kip was waiting.
Which side are these men on?
Some are solid with Gilman, others just members of the Alliance. But that don't mean they even like or really believe in what Gilman is doing. Just that they're afraid of him.
So you don't really know which way they'll go if someone stood up to Gilman?
For most of them, that's true. They're giving you the once-over, that's for sure. I expect the story about the gunfight at the trading post and what you've done to Red is spread.
Oh, damn. What's wrong?
Here comes Border crossing the street.
Falcon was sitting to Kip's left, his back to a wall in the corner, and he lifted his eyes to the street. Falcon had seen the gunslick a couple of times in the past. Not a big man, but lightning quick with a Colt. Take his guns away from him, and he wouldn't be much at all. The waitress brought their orders, large plates that could almost be called platters, filled with fried potatoes, a huge slice of ham, and three eggs. Half a loaf of fresh-baked bread and butter and jam on the side. She placed their orders before him, and the men dug in.
Damn good grub, ain't it?
Mm-hmm. Best I've had since supper last night.
You're sitting at my table.
I didn't see your name on it, so pick another one.
Get up.
Go to hell.
What did you say to me?
I said go to hell. Are you deaf as well as ugly?
Stand up!
When I finish my breakfast, little man. Now go away, you're bothering me.
Little man! Stand up, you son of a bitch!
Border dropped his left hand on Falcon's shoulder. Falcon knew the man's other hand was hovering near the butt of a gun. It was an old gunfighter's trick. Turn, and he was a dead man. Instead, Falcon reached up and grabbed hold of Border's index finger. Falcon pushed back from the table and stood up. He set himself and hit Border. Falcon was on him as fast as a striking snake. He jerked the man to his feet and began pounding him in the face. Then he picked up the gunfighter and threw him through the cafe's front window. Border landed on the boardwalk and rolled off into the dirt and horse shit of the street. Falcon calmly walked out the front door, jerked Border to his knees, and placed the man's hand on the edge of the boardwalk. Then he proceeded to stomp on Border's hands with the heel of his boot. Border's days as a feared gunfighter and hired killer were over. Falcon threw the man into a horse trough. Walked back into Rosie's. He took his seat at the table, picked up his knife and fork, and resumed eating. Kip stared at him in amazement for a moment. Shortly, two men got up, paid their bill, and walked out the door. One of them hauled Border out of the horse trough and dragged him across the street toward what passed for the town's doctor.
Jonas Chapman and Paul Major. Neither one of them can go to the privy without asking permission from Gilman.
So you scraped enough money together to hire one tough man, Kip. You still ain't gonna win in the long run.
Maybe not, Ned. But you and Gilman will know you've been in a fight.
I ain't never done you a hurt, Kip.
You ain't never done me and John no good, neither.
Ned got up, his back stiff with anger, and stalked out of the cafe. Another rancher stared hard at Falcon for a few seconds.
You got a name, mister?
Val Mack.
Yeah, seems like me and you will cross trail somewhere down the line.
Your face is awful familiar.
Could be. I get around.
Riders coming in. It's Gilman's boys.
Falcon and Kip watched as Ned waved the riders to a dusty halt and spoke briefly, more than once pointing to the cafe.
You boys better hit the back door.
I ain't never took no back door to avoid no man, Rosie. And I'm too damn old to start now.
Rosie immediately took down from the wall a small mirror and a painting of a mountain scene.
Kip, you and Mr. McClear are out of here. When you're outnumbered 5-1, it's just good sense, not cowardice.
Those boys out yonder are trouble hunting, Jeff, and you know it. Better to face it here than out at the ranch where Martha, Angie, and the boy could catch a bullet.
Any of those boys gun slicks?
None of them is known as such. But they're all drawing fighting wages, and I'd say they're all better than most with the six shooter.
They've all had a hand in attacking and running off other small ranchers in the area?
Oh, yeah. I can state that for a fact. All their names was told to me by one or the other of the families who was burnt out.
And that makes them no better than Gilman.
Falcon had spotted a greener propped up in a corner behind the counter. A double-barreled sawed-off shotgun was a fearsome weapon and would back down anyone if they had good sense.
Get that greener over here, Kip, and a few extra shells. We'll meet them face-to-face on a boardwalk when they dismount. That way, we'll have the high ground.
Good idea.
Kip pushed back his chair and walked behind the counter, picking up the sawed-off shotgun and breaking it open. Both barrels were loaded. He grabbed a handful of shells from a box and stuck them in his jacket pocket, just as Falcon was rising from the table and dropping a couple of coins for their breakfast. The men looked at one another and nodded, and then walked out of Rosie's cafe to stand on the boardwalk. Two of the snake riders had gone over to the docks to check on Border. Eight had dismounted and was standing by the hitch rail.
Claude, like the engines used to say, it's a good day for dying, if that's what you got in mind.
We come into town for breakfast, Kip. Then we was heading back to the ranch.
With bedrolls and your saddlebags packed heavy full of grub? I don't think so.
How's Border?
He's abed. You whooped him pretty bad.
He asked for it.
That ain't the way we heard it.
I'm telling you now.
The cowboy let it alone. He didn't want to call Falcon a liar, and he had enough sense to know that was what Falcon had set him up for.
What happens now, Kip?
Me and Val ride out of town and back to the ranch.
We ain't stopping you.
Claude! Border's hands is all busted up. Fingers and knuckles broke. He's ruined.
Falcon cut his eyes to the rancher, Ned. Ned paled and backed away from the snake hands at the hitch rails. He headed for the livery stable at a fast walk.
Kip, some friendly advice? Nance Noonan and Stegman is on the way here with some of their men. It's gonna get real nasty real quick.
Showdown time?
Looks that way, Kip. You knew it had to come sooner or later.
And they're pushing herds from their spreads west of here.
They need the grass, Kip.
What about the rest of us?
Your history, I reckon.
Not without a fight, we won't be.
Claude shrugged, being careful to move only his shoulders. Kip was no gunfighter, but he was a crack pistol shot, and Claude knew even with lead in him, the foreman could still kill one or two men as he was going down.
It's progress, Kip.
It's nothing but stealing, and you know it, Claude.
That ain't the way we see it.
Falcon had already picked out the two men he guessed would be the most dangerous when it came to a hook and draw. Those two were relaxed, where the others were tense. Those two were watching him, and only him, closely.
Kip, this don't have to be. Gilman's made Bailey a good offer for the land. He can push his beeves 100 miles south or east or north to start over. There don't have to be no more killing.
The Rocking Horse brand is here to stay, Claude. That's the way it's gonna be.
Your funeral, Kip.
Hell, let's start the burying now.
Bullet slammed into the cowboy's shoulder and knocked him down. Before the startled snake hands could blink, Falcon's left hand was filled with a .44, and Kip jacked back the hammers on the double-barreled sawed-off and was ready to take out two or three riders.
Hold it!
Claw was just a little pale around the mouth, knowing that the shotgun would cut him in half. When he was reasonably sure Kip wasn't going to pull the trigger, he shifted his gaze to Falcon.
You ain't no gun slick I ever heard of, mister. At least not by the name you're using. But you're a gun handler, nonetheless. It must have cost John Bailey a pretty penny to bring you in. But you keep this in mind.
For every gun slick John can buy, we can buy 20.
He unbuckled his gun belt, let it dangle, and deliberately turned his back to Falcon and Kip.
All you boys, hang your gun belts on your saddle horns. Then some of you get Gates over to the dock. It's over for this day. No more gunplay, Kip.
Suits me.
We're heading over to the Stampede, and we'll stay there till you and your gunfighter get gone.
That'll be about 45 minutes.
The Snake Hands walked across the wide street and into the saloon.
What the hell are we gonna do?
You go down to the livery and rent a wagon and a team. Meet me in the back at a general store. We're gonna stock up on supplies.
Old prune-faced Dean and his buffalo butt wife won't sell us nothing, Val.
I wouldn't bet on that, Kip. See you at the store.
Falcon walked over to the huge general store, which was just opening for the day, stepped inside. The owner, Dean, looked up from a ledger and frowned.
We're not open.
Oh, yes, you are. Get a pad and pencil and take down this list I'm about to give you.
I saw what happened. I don't have to sell the Rocking Horse trash. I'm under the protection of Miles Gilman.
Falcon slapped him off the stool. The store owner hit the floor just as his wife entered from the living quarters. She left quickly. Falcon bought every round of .44, .45, and .44-40 in the store. He bought every stick of dynamite, every cap and fuse. Then he stocked up on dried beans, potatoes, bacon, coffee, salt, flour, new blankets for the hands if they showed up, and anything else he could think of they might need. Then, with a smile, he bought a box of peppermint sticks and some whorehound candy. Guessing they might be hauling a heavy load, Kip had rented a freight wagon and four big pullers. That wagon was piled full when they pulled out.
Charge this to Gilman, in lieu of damages.
Dean was sputtering like a fish out of water as they headed for the ranch. Kip drove the heavily loaded wagon back to the Rocking Horse spread, his horse tied behind. After the supplies were offloaded, the Bailey family listened to all that had transpired in town while Jimmy played outside and munched on hard candy. After Falcon had finished, John poured another round of coffee for all and sat back down at the table beside his wife.
If Noonan and Stegman reach this country with their herds, we're finished. Together, they're running 25 or 30,000 head, at least.
We could stretch wire, John.
Wire won't stop that bunch, Kip.
We've got some time to think about that. It'll be 2 months or more before they get here, if they're even on the way.
What do you mean, Val?
It might be a bluff. Noonan and Stegman need to get cows to market. They're no different than any other rancher. Oh, they might be moving some of the younger stuff up here. That makes sense. But not 25 or 30,000 head. Not all the way from their spreads in southern Wyoming.
Spreads they killed small ranchers to get. But I think you're right, Val.
I'll go along with it. And you're right about them needing the money. Maybe not as bad as we do, but the word I get is they need to sell some cattle. Now, I can pay fighting wages for a few months, Val. After that, I'm broke.
Don't worry about that. I'm going to take a ride around your range, John. Get to know it. Look over the cattle. I'll be back in a couple days.
Without another word, Falcon stalked out of the house, off to his quarters to pack.
I wonder who that man really is.
I seen him somewheres. I know I have. I just can't put a name to the face. But I know it ain't Val Mack.
Well, he's got some education and plenty of manners. He's had some good raising. He's a gentleman.
A gentleman he may be, but he's the fastest gun I ever seen. And he can be as mean as a puma.
You think Border's out of the game?
Oh, yeah. Val ruined his hands.
Gilman will just bring in more gunfighters.
Just who the hell is this Val Mack, Claude?
I don't know, Miles. I never heard of no gunfighter named Val Mack.
Well, I want him stopped. Damn, Claude, he's just one man. Send some of the boys after him.
Well, there's a crowd of them itching to go.
Cut him loose. Take him out first, then we'll move against the Rocking Horse in force.
What about these telegrams he sent?
That's gibberish. I can't make any sense out of it. It's about a puma and a wildcat and a mustang and other bullshit. I think it's some sort of trick just to throw us off.
I'll get the boys up and moving.
Good. Let's get back to business.
After his forehand had left the main house, Miles Gilman sat in his study and pondered the situation.
Val Mack. Just another two-bit gun hand. Hell, I've got 20 on my payroll. He just got lucky, that's all.
Gilman had to have the Rocking Horse Range, and that was all there was to it. He was overgrazing his own grass, and John Bailey had the best grass and water anywhere around. How the old coot had managed to hang on this long was a mystery, but he couldn't be allowed to hang on much longer. John Bailey had to be moved or buried. And if his family got in the way and got hurt or killed, well, that would just be too bad, wouldn't it? In Colorado, Northern California, and New Mexico, attorneys read the wires from Falcon McAllister, all of them wondering what in the world Falcon was up to. Within the hour, the attorneys dispatched riders to all directions to find the men Falcon wanted. The riders carried money to outfit the men and get them on stagecoaches and trains. But why in the world Falcon McAllister wanted the disreputable old farts was still a mystery. The attorneys had already sent investigators into the town of Noon and were working to clear Falcon's name and had the federal warrants against him dropped, and that would be done. It was just a matter of time. The attorneys also wrote out bank drafts and got them moving toward Falcon, a.k.a. Val Mack. Falcon knew he was being followed an hour after leaving the ranch. Falcon had ridden through this country many times, but it had been a while, and he was struggling to remember all the ins and outs. After a few minutes, Falcon came to a spot he recalled. There was a tiny creek that flowed just behind a huge upthrusting rock, if his memory served him correct. He quickly swung in behind the rocks. He ran back to deliberately cover his trail as clumsily as possible. Then, staying on rocky ground, Falcon got his rifle and ran to a smaller outcropping of rocks about 40 feet away and directly across from the rocks that lay in front of the creek. He made himself as comfortable as possible and waited. Minutes ticked past and the sun grew hotter. The cold waters of the tiny spring-fed creek grew mighty appealing to Falcon. His mouth felt as though it were filled with cotton.
Getting thirsty, boy.
Falcon's hands tightened on his rifle, and he waited for the shock of the bullet. Falcon recognized the laughter. He turned and looked at the source.
Big Bob Marsh.
In the flesh and handsome to the ladies as ever.
Falcon stood up and the men shook hands.
What in the world?
I was about 100 miles north of that pissant town in Utah when you put lead into Chet and Butch Noonan. I know Lance would send men out looking for you. I thought about where you might go to hold up. Then I remembered that old cabin built into the mountain. By the time I reached the cabin, you done hauled it out of there. I've been tracking you ever since.
Now you found me? And a peck of trouble, too.
Hell, boy, I ain't never shied away from trouble in my life.
Falcon stepped back and looked hard at Big Bob. Falcon figured the man to be about 60 years old, but he was still in fine shape. A huge man, standing several inches taller than Falcon. Big Bob had come out west when he was just a boy, and Falcon's dad had talked often about the man. Big Bob was one of those larger-than-life legends of the mountains.
You want a job, Marsh?
Oh, I might do a dab of work for a month or two. What you got in mind?
Falcon built a small fire. He talked while he worked.
Oh, well, that shines, boy. It purely does. Hell yes, I'll stick around. I hate a bully. When you reckon the others will drag their sorry asses in?
Couple of weeks, maybe sooner. Depends on how close they are and how soon they get the word.
It'll be good to see some of them old boys. I ain't seen Wildcat Wheelers in 10 years or so. Hell, I thought Jack Stump was long dead. It's good to hear he's alive and kicking. Now, you sure Mustang is still breathing? God, I ain't seen him since. Oh, hell, I reckon it was 62 or thereabouts. But I seen Puma Parley about 2 years ago. He just lost his old cat and was training another one. Big cat, too. I purely hope he leaves that son of a bitch to home. Home being that cave he lives in. Beats me how a man can live with a damn mountain lion.
What's this cat's name?
Jenny. Just as gentle as a baby with Puma. Kept looking at me like I was his supper. Made me plumb edgy. You trying to get a hold of anybody else?
Dan Carson.
The last I heard, he was hanging around Denver. and that was just, oh, 2-3 months ago. Some woman had just about dabbed a loop on him, and he was trying to figure out a way to get shut of her. This ought to do it.
I don't know if the world's ready for 6 or 7 of you old coots all together in one spot.
We'll sure enough kick up a fuss now, let me tell you. I can rope, brand, herd, you name it, I've done it. And so have the others. Don't you worry none. Me and the boys will get them critters to a railhead. Well, let's head on to the ranch, boy. I want to meet the folks I'll be working for and stole my possibles.
John, Martha, Angie, Jimmy, Cookie, and the foreman, Kip, stood in a group and stared for a moment at Big Bob Marsh. He was the biggest man any of them had ever seen. 6'7" and weighing about 290 pounds, all bone and muscle.
Bob, welcome to the Rocking Horse.
Bob's hands swallowed the rancher's.
Thank you, Mr. Bailey. You can be sure I'll give you a day's work for a day's pay.
I'm sure you will, Bob. I'm paying fighting wages, 60 a month and found.
Well, if the grub's as good as the pay, I found me a home for a time.
We got the best cook in this part of Wyoming.
Come on, Bob. Let's get you settled in.
After the foreman and Bob had walked off, Jimmy nodded to Falcon.
Is that man a giant?
How'd you find him so quick, Val?
He found me. We just crossed trails a few miles north of here. Bob was just wandering. He's known me since I was just a tadpole. Now, if you all will excuse me, I want to get Bob settled in, pick out some horses for him to ride. It takes a big horse for him.
There was a few moments of silent shock, and then some mild panic at the Bank of Gilman as the bank president read the wire just received from a prestigious bank in San Francisco. A line of credit had been set up for one Val Mack in the sum of $25,000, the money guaranteed by the bank in San Francisco. Within minutes, the bank president was in his buggy, heading for the Striking Snake Ranch.
$25,000? Where the hell does a saddlebum gunfighter get that much money?
I ain't never even seen that much money all in a bunch.
Damn few people have. What the hell is going on around here?
I think we best do some checking on this Val Mack. Take a look down his back trail real close.
Gilman thought about that for a time, then shook his head.
Time we arranged for all that and got it done, it'd be too late. Stegman and Noonan is moving herds from the range down south right now. It's going to take some time before they get here. But I don't want this Val Mack to be around when they do. Cut the boys loose, Claude.
Falcon, you noticed, I reckon, this place is built like a fort. A main house, bunkhouse, even the barn.
10 years ago, there was a lot of Indian trouble here. Many of the settlers didn't last long. Men like John Bailey dug in and stayed. They built to last.
The men were sitting on a bench outside the bunkhouse, smoking and jawing while they waited for the call to come to supper.
Sooner or later, boy, you're going to have to tell these good folks who you are. That Angie gal, she's got her cap set for you.
I haven't been able to think of another woman since Marie died. Too soon, Bob.
Hey, I understand, boy. I felt the same way when Crow Woman was killed back in 51.
How long after Crow Woman was killed before you could take more than a passing interest in another woman?
Oh, whew. Long time, boy. I reckon that was the only woman I ever did love. You might be the same way. But that don't mean that every now and then you can't get an itch that only a woman can scratch. Just give it time. You're still following a trail called grief. But it'll fork one of these days, believe me.
Yo, boys. Supper's on the table. Got steaks and taters and gravy and hot bread and fresh baked apple pie.
Now let's eat, boy.
Falcon bent over to rub his leg just as someone on the ridges around the ranch complex squeezed the trigger. The bullet tore a hole in the outer wall of the bunkhouse, missing Falcon by only a few inches. 5 seconds later, Falcon and Big Bob Marsh were inside the thick walls of the bunkhouse, rifles in their hands.
Now this really pisses me off.
Getting shot at?
No, starting a war before I have time to eat my supper.
Stay in the house. The rifleman is on the ridge behind you.
Either of you men hit?
No, sir. Keep the supper hot for us.
Several minutes passed, but no more shots from the ridge. Bob took his hat and stuck it on the end of a broom handle. He slowly edged it past an open window.
Either they ain't falling for that old trick or they're gone.
I think they're gone. That shot was meant for me. They missed. They'll try again.
That damn sure wasn't no warning shot. If you hadn't have bent over right now, we'd all be arranging mourners for your planting.
Falcon shook his head and slowly opened the door to the bunkhouse. No shot split the warm late afternoon air. Falcon took a deep breath and sprinted toward the barn. He quickly threw a saddle on a horse, opened the big rear doors, and left the barn. He stayed low in the saddle, bent over the horse's neck, and headed for the ridge above the house. When he reached the crest of the ridge, he found exactly what he thought he'd find. Nothing but a few tracks. Dismounting, Falcon carefully scouted the area. He found one cartridge case in it, and lots of boot prints. He found where the gunman had picketed his horse and the hoof prints leading off toward the north. Falcon rode slowly back to the barn and stabled the horse, then walked to the bunkhouse.
Nothing?
Falcon held out the brass casing.
Just this.
Huh. Too bad it wasn't a .32-20. That would have made it easier to find the owner.
Well, there's one thing for certain. Whoever it was, I'll try again.
Falcon wasn't sure the Bailey family and Kip were ready for the appetite of Big Bob Marsh. Falcon knew how Big Bob could stow away the food, and he grinned at the expressions on the others' faces, as Big Bob ate enough supper for five people. There wasn't a scrap left on the table when Bob finished his third piece of pie and drank his fifth or sixth cup of coffee. Falcon had lost count.
Oh, that there is the finest grub this child ever ate. Excuse me.
Good thing you hauled in those other supplies, Val. If all the others you contacted do show up, food's gonna be a problem.
Yeah, but that'll probably be the last time I can pull that stunt. That's why I laid in such a supply of dried beans and the like. I don't figure we'll run short on beef.
Oh, them other boys will be here, John Bailey. You can count on that. Let's just say they, owe Val here a favor or two.
You know the others, Bob?
Known them all about 40 years. They're good boys, too.
I'm looking forward to meeting your friends, Bob.
Big Bob and Falcon stayed on Rockin' Horse Range for the next week, familiarizing themselves with the land and checking on John's herds. The cattle were in fine shape, fat and ready for the drive to market. There were a number of snake-branded cattle among the Rockin' Horse herds, as well as several other brands.
They all belong to members of the Cattlemen's Alliance. They claim all this land for their own.
Even though John and his family have legally filed on it and proved it up?
That don't make no difference to those bastards. They want all of Wyoming for their own.
Then the federal government is going to have to step in and do something.
Not damn likely. The Cattlemen's Alliance has too much stroke with the politicians for that to happen. Lots of money being passed under the table.
What the hell are they waiting on?
Nance Noonan and Rod Stegman and their army of gunslingers. Soon as they arrive, all hell's going to break loose. They're fixing to claim everything from the Johnson County line west.
How far west?
Far as the law allow. Probably over to Dakota. They get their way, there ain't gonna be a small rancher or a farmer left alive to talk about it. Let's cut out the snake brands and start them moving toward their own range. I'm against it, but them's John's orders. He likes to play it straight and on the up and up.
A good way for them to call us rustlers if any snake riders come up on us.
I know it, but John don't want no other brands mixed in with ours.
Where is John this morning?
Him and little Jimmy's riding East Range. It's fairly safe there. By that, I mean there ain't been no trouble so far over there. That's just too many miles away from the Snake Rider's home base.
That's where most of the remaining smaller ranches and farmers are located?
Mm-hmm. Rockin' Horse is sort of the line between the Snake Range and what's left of the small ranchers and fanners. If we was to pull out, it would be a slaughter.
So if they can't run you out, they'll have to kill you all.
They kill the boy, too?
Sure. They killed several boys younger than Jimmy. They kill whole families by burning down their houses around them, whilst the night riders laid down gunfire to keep them from running outside.
Well, maybe we'll get lucky and run into a passel of them.
They were moving the cattle along at a walk. Even though they were someone else's cows, and that someone a sworn enemy, they didn't want to run any pounds off of them. That was typical of many ranchers in the West. When the sun was center sky, they stopped to noon. They ate sandwiches Cookie fixed for them. Falcon made a small hat-sized fire to boil coffee.
Riders coming. Sounds like a bunch of them.
We're still on Rocking Horse Range, aren't we?
It's debatable. I say yes. The snake people say no.
Three of them loosened their pistols and leather and waited. They'd been pushing about 40 head of snake-branded cattle along, and they all felt they knew what the snake trouble hunters would say when they rode up.
Eight of them.
That'll give them courage against three of us.
The snake riders reined up a few hundred yards away from the Rocking Horse men. They stared at the cattle for a moment and pulled rifles from saddle scabbards. They began walking their horses slowly toward the smell of coffee.
I don't know a single one of them. Must be those new hands Gilman hired. I heard people in Rosie's talking about them. Hired guns from Texas and New Mexico.
The snake bunch stopped their horses about 25 feet away from the three Rocking Horse riders.
Well now, looks like we done found us some rustlers. The boss said he'd been losing beeves out here.
We're pushing those cattle back to Snake Range. If you had any sense, you'd have circled around and seen that by looking at the tracks before you came riding in here and running that mouth.
I think that old-timer just called you a dummy.
Yeah, Monroe. You gonna take that lip off of that old coot?
I think I'll hang you first, you old bastard.
Kip, Big Bob, and Falcon had spread out, 12 to 15 feet between them. All three of them were wearing two pistols. Kip and Big Bob had the second pistol tucked behind their gun belts. Falcon wore a two-gun rig, the left side 44 worn on a slant, butt forward.
Drop them guns, boys. We caught you cold, rustling, so there's no use arguing about it.
The man tossed a running iron down to the ground.
There's the proof.
Don't get dirt in the coffee. I got my mouth all fixed for a cup.
You'll never get a chance to drink another cup, you old fart.
To be no more than a couple of years away from your mommy's titty, you're about a half-mouthy son of a bitch, ain't you?
You son of a bitch!
A second later, the snake-branded cattle were off and running, the sounds of gunfire spooking them from their quiet grazing into a stampede. Falcon blew the flat-faced one out of the saddle. Bob's pistol barked, and the mouthy puncher went ass over elbows backwards. Kip's six-shooter roared, and a third snake gun hand's butt left the saddle. Two snake punches were mortally hit and two wounded. Kip had a burn on the outside of his right leg from a rifle bullet. Bob had a crease on his left arm. Falcon's hat was blown off his head. The Rocking Horse riders were still standing, and the snake riders had three dead and several wounded. Those snake riders still in the saddle dropped their rifles, managed to get their rearing, frightened horses calmed down, and raised their hands in the air, the two of them bleeding from minor wounds.
You boys shuck them gun belts, now!
Falcon and Bob were busy ripping the gun belts off the dead and the wounded and gathering up rifles. They hoisted the dead belly down across saddles and helped the wounded get back on the hurricane decks of their still spooked horses.
You boys can round up your own damn cattle. Just clear out and do it right now.
10 seconds later, the snake riders were gone, taking their dead with them. Falcon found his hat and looked sadly at the huge holes in the crown, front and back.
Well, see, it'll keep your head cool in the heat.
We were damn lucky, boys. By all rights, we should be eating dirt about now.
It ain't my time yet. A gypsy woman told me once that I was gonna die in bed, an old man surrounded by six beautiful young women, all moaning and sobbing and carrying on about my passing.
And you believed her?
Hell no. But it's a beautiful thought, ain't it? You boys sit and have some of this coffee. Hits a spot after that little fracas.
Rider coming. Now, who could that be?
Well, hang on. It's Angie.
Alone? Out here? That girl's always been headstrong.
Bob's mouth fell open and he gaped at Angie. She was wearing men's breeches and had been riding astride. Kip shook his head at the unseemly sight. Falcon stood and let his eyes take in her figure in the tight-fitting men's pants. The young woman filled him out admirably.
I was riding and I heard shots.
Girl, you've been told and told about riding alone. They still Injuns out here, not to mention snake riders who would shoot you on sight. Or worse.
Now I've been told again. Anyway, I'm here. You want me to ride back alone?
No. Girl, your pa bought you a side saddle rig. It ain't proper for you to be wearing men's breeches and riding like that.
I hate that uncomfortable thing. Why, you men are wounded.
Oh, nothing serious, Miss Angie. Grab your piece of ground and rest a spell, then we'll head on back.
No proper place for a woman to be out here on her own wearing breeches.
Oh, settle down, Uncle Kip.
Let's get back to the ranch. I don't like the idea of Martha's being alone.
Don't you worry none about Martha, Val, or this gal here for that matter. They both fought off Injun attacks more times than you can count. And they're both crack shots. Any snake rider who comes within shooting range of Martha is going to be in real trouble. But we do need to get back, I reckon. Miles Gilman ain't going to like what we just done to his hired guns.
The owner of the Snake Ranch sat in his study and listened as his foreman Claude told him about the shooting. He didn't get mad, not at first. He just had a slight sick feeling in the pit of his stomach. Ever since this Val Mack had met up with some of his men at the old trading post, Miles had felt somewhat disturbed about the situation. Now there was another man riding for the rocking horse who was quick on the shoot. An older man, admittedly, but slick with a gun nonetheless.
All right, Claude. Thanks. Get them wounded into town to the docks. And I'll see about burying the others.
All right, boss. You all right, Miles?
What? Oh, yeah, I'm fine. Claude, Dick's to describe the other fellow with Valiant Kip. You got any idea who this older man is?
Well, from his description, my guess is that it might just be Big Bob Marsh.
The Army Scout? The Bounty Hunter?
Yeah, and a hell of a lot more than that. Big Bob's been prowling the high country for 45 years, ever since he was about 12 or 13 years old. He's friends with old Preacher and Smoke Jensen, too. Big Bob Marsh is one mean son of a bitch, Miles. If he was to put the call out, this country would be swarming with what's left of the mountain men.
Miles' oldest son, Lars, had entered the study and was standing quietly listening.
Crap! Pack of old turds who need help getting on a bronc. I can't believe you'd be afraid of a pack of old men.
Boy, those men opened up this country. They might not have been the first white men here, but they wasn't far behind. Back in 61 or 62 when I was down in Colorado, I seen a mountain man named a Jack Stump kill 5 men before any of them knew what was happening to them. Don't you never tangle with no mountain man, and I don't give a damn how old he is.
Oh, fuck mountain men!
Lars left the room. Embarrassed, Claude waited until the angry flush had left Miles' face.
Damn hot-headed kid.